Welcome back to Roaming with Restless Women. Today I'm joined by a very special and wonderful guest. Her name is Queen, and I'm going to mess up her last name, but I'm going to try Mojakasane. And good enough? I'm sorry. I'm from the South. We are not known for our diction down here in the Southern United States. We have a bad accent anyway. But today I am very, very happy to have her on the show. And she has a very interesting vision and mission in the world. And I was so excited to see this come through when she applied to be on the podcast. So I can't wait to ask her questions about it. Queen is a visionary leader. She's dedicated to creating sustainable, community-driven solutions that address climate change and energy poverty in Africa. As the Sustainable Futures Coordinator at Tangela, Queen champions innovative programs that empower underserved communities by fostering equitable access to clean energy. With a strong background in project management, strategic communications, and stakeholder engagement, she works to build partnerships that amplify the impact of Tangela's initiatives across the continent. She grew up in post-apartheid South Africa. She overcame and faced systemic challenges, shaping her resilient spirit and commitment to building equitable opportunities for others. Her life story is a testament to the power of determination, advocacy, and grassroots action to create meaningful change. Specifically, her biggest overarching passion is gender equity, and we're going to definitely be talking about that in this session. She is also the founder of Youth on the Rise, which is a nonprofit focused on youth empowerment. She has spearheaded initiatives addressing youth unemployment, education gaps, and gender-based violence in Lesotho and South Africa. She mobilized over 500 young leaders for the Lesotho Youth Summit and received the Future Africa Leaders Award in 2023 for her outstanding contributions to socioeconomic development. Her impact extends across Africa. In Ghana, she co-organized the Ghana Central Expo, leading fundraising campaigns, facilitating health screenings for over 500 people, and supporting 300 plus local entrepreneurs. She's a recognized thought leader and frequently featured in prominent African media outlets, and actively contributes to research on youth empowerment, peace building, and socioeconomic development. I'm telling you one thing, she is a busy woman. Welcome, Queen. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I can't beat the allegations. I am
Well,
definitely one busy individual. I'm so grateful for being here.
thank you so much for applying. Let me just ask you, why did you apply to be on this particular show?
I really do want to be in spaces where women always want to be better, do better, and inspire other women. Because the world is it was built for the other gender, and we're trying to change that as much as we can. We're trying to change the norms, so we're saying to the younger girls, instead of thinking that only a man can do this, know that you can do it as well. So I think my passion aligns with what Restless Women is about. And this is why I actually applied.
Very nice. Well, that's part of what I'm doing here as well. We all have to make sure that the younger generations coming up have the tools they need to forge a different world, a kind of world that is more geared toward equality across the genders, regardless of what gender you are. But we have a little bit of makeup to do, don't we? Okay. So tell me a little bit about your past, your upbringing, and what was it that inspired you to get into this particular area?
All right. Thank you so much. So, I was born and bred in Lesotho. It is a country inside South Africa.
Okay.
Not a lot of people know that there's another country inside South Africa. So I grew up, I was in South Africa and Lesotho, concurrently, but I spent a lot of time in Lesotho as well. And growing up in a developing nation where there's a lot of object poverty, there's a lot of bureaucracy in the government, corruption, you get to see how that impacts the society as a whole. We see, especially on the young people and even further, the young women. So there's a lot of crime resulting from the poverty that the society is facing amongst young people. There's a lot of gangsterism there. There's a lot of inability of young children to afford computer literacy because the only schools that offer such an education are overpriced, and the rest of the population cannot afford it. There are a lot of really many socioeconomic issues that arise. Unemployment, for instance, it's for lack of a better word, it's ridiculous. It is very hard for a young person to, find a job that he or she studied for, in like where I come from. And this may sound very devastating, but I can assure the readers that the current state of things is worse than what I'm actually describing. Because so this is essentially the reality that I grew up in. Even myself, I had to experience what you call a home burglary, for instance, an armed robbery. And this is something that is very normal there because people are trying to survive one way or the other. And we see, I saw, I'm very observant, and I observed how this is affecting us now. Someone is an armed robber, robs another person. Now the person is also traumatized, right? They have to seek therapy and all that. So it's just an unending cycle of maybe the kind of challenges that we face in the developing country that I am from. And so upon realizing, the gap and the problems that we're facing, I decided to be a problem solver and actually start initiatives aimed at targeting these very problems that I faced in a lot of in a variety of ways, really. This is where I started the Kids in Tech Initiative, targeting those children who cannot afford computer literacy education by actually, teaching them about, what a world looks like when you're tech savvy, and teaching them in a language that they can understand, giving them tips on how to actually get into a place where maybe they can take advantage of it, for example, in institutions of higher learning, encouraging them to consider skill taking courses such as IT, coding, so on and so forth, be so that they can see the opportunities that they can have when they have those skills. Now started as well as, targeting when we talk about gender equity, I thought to myself that the moment I was robbed at home, right? The one of the questions or one of the persistent thought that I experienced was, okay, I don't really care about maybe what these people are going to take from my home, but I care about what they could do to me as a woman who can't fight them physically. And because I know how gender-based violence is prevalent, that was what I was actually afraid of, right? And then I saw that, you know what? There are many workshops that we're doing for the young girls. They're very important, but something needs to be done for the young boys as well, so that they're educated about what gender equity really is, why it's important, why they should really live a crime-free life, why some of those social issues that we're facing that are actually caused by the male gender. Because when you look at the perpetrators of crime, it's mainly the males. That's what statistics say. And if you want to establish an a gender equitable society, then both genders must be carried along. And so I started mentorship sessions for young boys, both in my local area, like in different high schools. And I even went as far as going to those in the juvenile centers who had actually done, crimes, connected them with psychologists, actually encouraged them to turn a new leaf and, choose a life of no crime, have a different outlook on life. Then we talk about the entrepreneurship summits that I initiated as well to try to bridge that gap between unemployment, poverty, and these are the many initiatives that I pioneered. Obviously, can't talk about one after the other by name, but this was how, I found my passion in actually advocating for marginalized groups and empowering those who, maybe without my help, wouldn't be empowered. And that was how I now won the Future Africa Leaders Award in Nigeria in 2020. Yes. And that's essentially how my journey started.
So where did you go to get funding to help you start some of these programs? I know that they're nonprofits, but unfortunately with the US cutting back on a lot of its support, which I don't agree with, by the way, of developing countries. Where did you go to get your funding and get everything started?
I think it's very important the outlook that I maybe have on the state of things and perhaps the solutions, right? I believe that we should work with what we have to get to where we want to get to instead of depending on maybe an outside aid, because now when we depend on outside aid, we may have to carry out the agenda of our donor. Right.
Oh,
So I worked
perfect.
with what I have. I worked with what I have. I approached the local, I leveraged on the resource, the little resources that were there in the community, trying to, we have a little an organization focusing on empowering boys through football. Let me approach them and say, hey, I also want to empower boys in this way. Like, how can I join hands with you to maybe say, can you provide me with a venue to host my seminar? Then I go to another organization, or I go to a church, or I just speak with my fellow students to say, hey, you guys have laptops. You know what? Can the 30 of us just find a venue where we can just place those laptops and then the children can come in to learn? And then so it's actually a lot of problem solving, thinking critically outside the box, which is what is needed for, thriving systems, really. So that was actually how I did it. I did it with little to no funding. Maybe someone who works at a company will say, you know what? I'll sponsor the certificates that you're going to award your participants, So it was those little building blocks that now made this whole initiative a success.
So you mentioned your peers. Where did you go to school? Because obviously you're incredibly educated. So where did you get to go to school, and how did that really impact what the things that you saw and your problem-solving skill?
Yes. So fortunately, yes, I am academically sound. So I was then, after high school, able to get a sponsorship from the government to do an international baccalaureate. And now this is an American system that maybe it's equivalent to the high school diploma, but after my high school, I have to do 2 more years because of the inefficiencies of the country's education system, right? So the international baccalaureate has a lot of emphasis on a holistic approach to learning, and we have the community engagement aspect of it. We call it CAS. I don't know if you know about IB, But yeah, so we have IB, and that is where we're encouraged to do more community work. So because of the passion that I already had, and because this was a prerequisite for the students to do community work, I was like, great, now I'm gonna hijack all of you. We're gonna do this because I have great ideas. So that was how, you know, in terms of the support that I got from the school as well, it was really important because they endorsed a lot of letters that I wrote to these different organizations because they're like, you're doing what we're asking you to do. So this is more about leveraging thinking outside the box and critically, like I've already said.
Specific besides education and the threat, the physical threats that women and girls in your society and actually all around the world, it's not your just your society, but it's more prevalent there when there's a lot of poverty around. What other specific inequities do you find when you're looking around at the women and girls in your location?
I think it is the access to education.
That's number one.
That is definitely at the top of my list because if I didn't have the resources to be learned the way that I am, to have, so I want to mention that I then, to go to university, got a scholarship from the MasterCard Foundation. This
Very
was very
cool.
pivotal because some of the things that come with the scholarships include little, not little even, but things like laptops, things like ensuring that you're able to eat, you're able to do this. So without that assistance, I wouldn't have a laptop and be speaking to you right now. You see, so the little dots connect. I wouldn't have been able to go to school to do my undergraduate degree. And this is why it's important for organizations, you know, to actually focus on empowering, you know, the young people, especially the young women. Because even for me, despite the passion that I had, the critical thinking, I still needed to be empowered, right? So that I can, you know, advance the work that I'm doing. Which is where I'm at now. I've a totally the trajectory of what I'm doing has totally, you know, taken off because of the different help that I types of help that I got from different organizations.
Well, and I think that a lot of people, especially here in the United States, we have no concept of what people in underdeveloped or developing worlds go through. We have absolutely none. Even the poorest people in the United States, which, by the way, there shouldn't be any, but greed is everywhere. Even the poorest people here can manage to get themselves fed pretty much. They can, they're not, for the most part, they're not facing nearly the struggles that other parts of the world are facing. And I wish for the whole world that we could walk in each other's shoes. I wish that were possible because I know I have been to Russia, to Siberia, and this was 30 years ago when 27 years ago when I went to adopt my second child. And the living conditions in that small town, and it was a university town, the living conditions there were, I couldn't even imagine being able to live in the cold. In some of those homes, which were nothing more than shacks, in the extreme cold during the winter in Siberia, I couldn't even. When I came back, I was so ashamed of pretty much everything I had, and so grateful for everything that I had. And I took totally, I think everybody, if they were able to go and see how other people actually have to live, they would have a lot more empathy and they would be a lot more willing to be grateful for what they have and share. But that's my wish for the world. And I love the whole thing that you have going on with tying in sustainability with your mission of gender equity. That makes total sense to me, and it kind of goes along with the education. So tell me about how you got into Tangelic and what that mission is, and how you enable your mission through that as well.
Oh, thank you so much. I just want to echo what you said about maybe if someone were privileged, definitely coming to these parts of the world or even other areas that are, experiencing war. We know what's happening right now in Palestine, and so that would offer them a lot more perspective. And I couldn't agree more. So, circling back to what I do at Tangelic, I'm the Sustainable Futures Coordinator at Tangelic. So this means that I do a lot of work in stakeholder engagement, ensuring that there is gender equity in our programs, and talking about thought leadership because of the experience that I have leading various initiatives. And Tangelic essentially is a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to addressing energy poverty and climate change across Africa. So it is committed to community empowerment, gender equity, like I've already said, and sustainable development. So we're aiming to do this in what I would call three tiers. The first part is what we call the Sunrise Spectrum Initiative. And then the second part is an incubation program called the GCEEI. And then another leg would be the PACE Initiative. This is more like a think tank knowledge exchange system for collecting the data that we're going to be using to carry out these other initiatives. So the Sunrise Spectrum Initiative essentially is a model where we're empowering communities with clean energy access through solar home systems, clean cook stoves, and community solar microgrids. So I think I'll just go back a bit to say that there are a lot of countries, particularly in the global south, that are facing energy poverty. This is a particularly pertinent issue because without access to electricity or power, there are a lot of activities that you cannot do, cannot have the light that we're using now. You cannot cook, you cannot essentially generate energy, right? And it's a core component of the daily activities that we need for survival as human beings. And I have been to Ghana before, you mentioned, to do an entrepreneurship empowerment event there. And the access to electricity is really scarce. And when I was there, now I became grateful that at least there's CO2, there is hydrothermal energy that we use to generate electricity. But in such areas where there's no renewable energy and there's a lot of corruption, there's a lot going on in Ghana with regards to the mining, illegal mining disaster happening there. And so they really haven't been able to solve the energy crisis that they're facing. And this is an important issue because it's affecting how local communities are able to develop. Some communities are stuck in the past because they can't catch up with what the world is currently going through, the revolution that the world is currently going through. And this means that though they can easily be left a generation behind if this is not addressed, which is why we're here to say, because when you look at the geographical location of Ghana, for instance, it is near the equator, meaning that it has a lot of hours of sunlight. When you look at maybe also the legislation of Ghana, for instance, they do encourage a lot of this renewable energy activities and essentially the need for energy itself. So it places Ghana as a perfect location for our flagship program, which we do hope to replicate in many other countries. But for now, in 2026, we want to launch the Sunrise Spectrum Initiative there. So that is about what the Sunrise Spectrum Initiative would be about. But then we also realize that in order to empower communities, we have to do it in such a way that after we donate these items that they can use, they should be able to maintain them. And this has a lot to do with their economic capabilities or the economic activity going on in such a place, right? So
Right.
now we're thinking, how do we empower the entrepreneurs in these areas, particularly in the clean energy space, to, keep their enterprises going on in a sustainable manner? We can do this through vocational training, investment into their enterprises, providing mentorship, training. I've already spoken about seed funding. So this is what we're looking at so that there can be an increase in the economic activity going on in this area. And we're able to further solve the problem of energy poverty that we're trying to address by letting the young critical thinkers on ground do it for themselves, right? And then also we have the PACE initiative. This is the Pan-African Climate Exchange, where we want to drive continent-wide climate action through knowledge sharing, collaboration, and innovative financing mechanisms. We want the people in these areas to be able to carry out studies for issues that affect them and then come up with plausible solutions that the government can adopt in order to address these problems. I recently spoke at the G20 Women Empowerment Conference here in South Africa. And one of the pertinent issues that was being discussed was that we don't have enough data. We don't have enough information. We normally rely, especially in Africa, we normally rely on research carried out by, let's say, Oxford scholars or Harvard scholars. And in as much as this is good, we appreciate it. It would be even better if we carried out our research ourselves, if we informed our own policies ourselves. And this is why it's important that there's a holistic approach to solving this problem. We don't rely on outside sources saying research says, but we don't know where the research is coming from, and we have to take initiative. So this is essentially the three-tiered model that Tangelic is looking at. And I think it is wonderful because it speaks to a lot of the aspects that I'm already passionate about as an
Yes.
advocate. And essentially, yeah.
Well, and the other thing about data and research depends it your interpretation and how you gather it really should be culturally appropriate. So, for instance, how I base in my little middle suburban life, white woman, born in the 60s, how I look at data that is collected here in the United States, I understand more of it. It makes more intuitive sense to me because I grew up here. I read something in that data and in my experience and in my culture that isn't necessarily spelled out in the numbers. So I wouldn't presume to take data that, you gathered from your perspective about my society and take it at face value. Why would I? I appreciate it because it does give that outside perspective. But to get to that underneath why does this matter so much? What is it really saying to the population based on past events and cultures and traditions that nobody has to talk about because we all know. It's all of those undercover things that if you are developing in where you are in your community, you're not going to miss those subtleties. So I commend you for that, absolutely, for that piece in particular, because it does matter. It does matter who administers the surveys and the interviews and reads the data, gathers the data. Is the appropriate way to gather the data? I think you are right on target with that, 100%. You're going to get some great results based on that.
Thank you so much. To echo you again, yes, it is very important for us to interweave, I think what we would call them indigenous knowledge systems, right, into the modern systems that we're trying to incorporate into our societies. I was speaking to someone from the University of Johannesburg, a lecturer, and she was telling me that it is, someone had asked her about how AI, is going to impact the African development, this and that. And she was like, a lot of these assumptions being made about how AI is going to impact us does not mean anything to us because we don't even know. It doesn't speak to us because first, the data wasn't collected by us. And when someone from the outside says, this is the projection of, let's say, how this is going to impact this, there has to be an incorporation of the indigenous people. There's to be a localized approach to, carrying out these things. So I really agree. I really agree. And this is what we aim to do at Tangelic. And I think we have something really good going on.
I 100% agree. I'm thrilled that you guys are doing this. And I have three questions that I like to ask at the end of every interview. Before I ask those questions, do you have anything else you'd like to share and make sure our audience hears?
I think I would just like the audience to be part of what Angelic is doing in terms of visiting our social media sites, visiting our website, supporting. We're always looking out for collaboration, more ideas, innovative ways to solve these problems. So you can one can find us at www.tangeliclife.org, and then they can now see and navigate the website on how to become a part of Tangelic and just follow through on the work that we're doing.
That's amazing. I will definitely make sure that that information is in the show notes. And folks, if you are at all interested in developing your mind and your brain and thinking outside of the United States for a change, please go there and see what these folks are doing for gender equity, for climate change, for all of this great, beautiful stuff that they're doing in their countries to make sure that their people are getting to be able to be their live their best lives. Okay, I have three questions that I ask at the end, if you don't mind. First one is, please close your eyes. And I'm going to say two words. And when I say those words, I want you to notice what you're seeing in your mind and then open your eyes and describe it to me. Okay? The two words are wise women. Okay, so open your eyes and tell me what you're seeing.
I'm seeing women who have been able to utilize the resources, whether little or abundant, that they have, which it's great to come from both sides of the spectrum. Women who have utilized the resources that they have to bring on younger women, empower them, bring them into these spaces. I become very excited when I approach an older woman and she takes me under her wing, because sometimes, as women, we may or may not be approachable, but to see, women passionate about mentoring the younger women, That is essentially what I see when I see what a wise woman would be.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. That's beautiful. The next question is, where do you like to roam?
Where do I like to roam?
Yes.
That's a very interesting question. Maybe if I would get a bit more meaning on what roaming would entail.
Where do you like to go in your mind? Or if you have a special physical location you like to go, somewhere that you like to go to rest and relax and think.
I live, even though I'm currently speaking to you from Johannesburg, I live in Cape Town, South Africa. It has beautiful ocean views, one of the most beautiful I've ever seen. Just, the ocean merging with the mountains is something that is awesome. I'm always in awe. So every time I go to Cape Town, the ocean, it just soothes me, and I'd say that's where I like to roam.
There you go. Perfect. And my final question, what makes you restless in a good way? What makes you itchy in your seat and you want to go do something? What is it?
I think, what I do, it's very hard to single out, because what I do is closely aligned with what I'm passionate about. And when, let's say, a new aspect of it, like if we ha I have a project, the adrenaline rush is something like I can't even explain it. And just carrying out the work that I do is really fulfilling, makes me really happy, makes me restless. And that is it, really.
That's beautiful. Well, that's how life is supposed to be. I think a lot of people right now are listening to this and they're thinking, "Oh, I wish I was doing something I was that passionate about." And my challenge back to them is, "Why aren't you?" It doesn't mean it has to be your full-time job. It just means that's where you're putting a lot of your energy. So good for you. I'm glad that you are living your purpose-filled life. It makes a difference to all of us in the world when people act on their purpose like you do. So, thank you so much, Queen. Thank you so much for being on the episode. I really, really appreciate it. We'll make sure that we get the message out there, and we will probably have you back in a year or two just to see how you're doing. How does that sound?
That sounds phenomenal. I'd love to be back and talk more about what has been happening, the progress so far. It's really exciting.
Definitely make that happen. Thank you so much. And folks, make sure you take a look at the show notes, and we will see you next time.